Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lossoff. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Kurt Russell is currently on the cover of GQ magazine.
Whoa! How old is Kurt Russell now, do you think?
We are calling it the Curtisance.
The Curtisance.
And we are associate producers of the Curtisance.
Because, like, really our last 75 episodes kind of built up to this happening.
Yeah. On the cover, right, he's wearing pretty much all denim. And they shouldn't call it the Canadian tuxedo anymore. They should call it the Kurt tuxedo. Or the Russito.
The Kurtito.
The Kurtito?
Is it like,
no, wait, that can be a drink, the Kurtini.
Yeah. Is the tuxedo, like, sleeveless?
The sleevelessini.
Yeah. Oh man, I like the Curtini. What is a Curtini?
Oh, I think it's just straight up gin, right? Yeah. There's nothing else.
Yep. It's like 190 proof boar's head with whatever you can put into it to cut down the alcohol grittiness.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's like Everclear grain alcohol. It's just like the most hair on your chest drink ever.
But I'm trademarking this right now. Curtisance, Curtini,
yeah,
Curtsito, or Russito. Doesn't matter. We get it. We get all the royalties because we're the associate producers now.
Yeah. John Levingood, what's your favorite Kurt Russell-themed drink?
I mean, the Sleevelessini, the only problem is that I think that people are going to mess up the name. But, you know, a friend of Mark's and mine works at Alamo Drafthouse, and he was making up their front bar to look like The Shining, and he was going to make, like, drinks themed to The Shining. And so, like, what if we opened a bar, guys, and it was just, like, all Kurt Russell-themed everything?
Well, so what's three Kurt Russell drinks right now.
I mean, you could do the Curtini and the Sleevelessini right away.
What about the rye patch?
Ooh.
Well, that's neat. And then you could also have, like...
That's neat. I'm patting myself on the back right now.
Wait, something with bomb in it. Not Kurt bomb, but we need something with bomb in it for the college night.
Oh, gosh. The Burton bomb.
The Burton bomb!
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's
it.
There it is.
And then we serve absinthe at the end of the night so that everyone reenacts the elevator scene. Like, oh, I feel
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I feel pretty invincible after that Burton bomb.
Yeah, I feel good.
Yeah, I guess. I feel like we can just do this.
Yeah.
we could just record a pod. And, like, Kurt Russell it up.
All right, guys.
Rye patch.
Now that we're in the mood, I think it's time to answer some listener questions. Mark, I think you got the questions for us this week.
I do. I do have the questions this week. And the first one comes from Chris. And it says, what new 60-second character, that's one of the podcasts we did, or 90-second characters, would you like to be in an upcoming film? So it has to be a new character in any upcoming film. But 60 seconds. A 60-second character means you're only on screen for 60 seconds.
I want to see, like, the life and death of Seabass from Dumb and Dumber. I just want to, like...
a montage?
Yeah, I want to see... I imagine it's just him, like... like, people, like, everywhere, wherever he goes, like, kick his ass, Seabass. Everywhere he goes. Like, he's given, like, a book report in front of the class, like, his friends, like, cheering him on. Kick his ass, Seabass. He's at the altar of his wedding. Kick her ass, Seabass.
So you're going to be Seabass?
Yeah.
So wait, like, so you're taking an old 60-second character and giving him a new role?
Oh, is that what we're doing? I don't know. Well, I might have been confused.
Because Seabass was a character.
Yeah, I was thinking, what new 60-second character would you like to be in an upcoming film?
Oh, okay.
See, like, the new kind of threw me, because I kind of did the same thing as Lazavath. Like, I actually, because when I heard 60-second character, I thought of a favorite 60-second character of mine, and then I wanted to imagine, like, that same character, and I just happened to do the same thing. Like, imagine that same character in a different movie with a totally different 60-second role. But it's not just him doing the same thing that he did last time.
So Seabass could be a kickboxer.
Yeah.
Like putting Seabass in Kickboxer Vengeance Part 2.
Yeah.
Wait, so first off, what I first thought of, but I can't use it because it's way too fresh, though, was I was just reminded, because Hell or High Water was such an awesome movie. How about that waitress from the Steak and Eggs Cafe?
Oh yeah.
Like, she was great. Like, how she got both of those old marshals who are so tough to, like, be totally like cowering to her. But either way, oh, that was an awesome movie, and she was like the best 60-second character ever. But so I was thinking of actually the librarian in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade who thought that his stamp was really, really loud.
Yeah.
Remember that when he's banging it and Indy's like cracking on the granite tiles? And so I was just imagining, so they're going to make a new Indy movie, yet another Indy movie. And I was just thinking, like, what if we saw this librarian, right? And like, you know, Indy's running through, he's being chased by not Nazis anymore, but some bad people who work for a dictator somewhere. And like, Indy ends up running through an old folks home, and this librarian, who's now, I don't know, 96, is in his old folks home, and they're doing some kind of sharing moment, and he's just talking about something, and while he's talking about something totally new, and he like gets angry because people aren't listening, and he smashes his fist on the table, that's when like there's some kind of explosion or something happens because of Indy's chase. Like, I just like to see that. And now the old guy thinks he's totally like nuts and senescing. I think that would be cute.
Nice.
He can get married to the Steak and Eggs woman. She's pretty bossy, but she'll keep his life in line.
What episode was 90-second characters, 60-second characters?
Oh, it was in the 30s. It was like 36 or 38, I think.
So mine.
I think.
My character would be Elvis Leader.
Wait, what?
The Elvis Leader, star pilot in Star Wars Episode 8. Because all those pilots in the Star Wars movies stay on target. Stay on target. There's too many. You know, like, everyone remembers everything they say. All these pilots are known. They have toys. So for me, I'd want to be a pilot because I'm only on screen for 60 seconds during Episode 8, right? I'd want to be Elvis Leader. So I'd want Elvis sunglasses, Elvis mutton chops. And I'm like, there's a lot of people out here. Like, I want to be Elvis Leader fighting with the rebels against the bad guys.
If people don't appreciate your mutton chops, do you tell those 60-second characters to shoot themselves in the head? Mom and Dad, like, save the world.
But I feel like people would be like watching it, you know, Star Wars Episode 8 is all serious, you know, and they're like, oh man, there's about to be a space battle. Then Elvis, you know, Elvis Green Leader pops up. Like,
just straight face.
Like,
just,
you know, that movie's gonna make $1.5 billion. So like, Elvis Leader's like flying in, then I go, there's too many. Then I get blown up. And everyone would just be like, did that just happen? Like, what what just happened? And then, like, I would have my own toy. I would have, like, books written about me. So I'd be on screen for 60 seconds, and I could do conventions for the rest of my life.
Oh, that's right. The convention scene. It's a powerful one.
Elvis, you know, Q&A with Elvis. I'd be like, I don't know. I was in there for a day, and they actually let me get away with being Elvis.
And I miss those 60-second characters, by the way. But and I checked that it was episode 36. I don't know if that was one of my guesses or not.
I just think, like, those pilots are really remembered. Like, they're pretty iconic. So I'd want to be one of those. But I wouldn't want to be, like, the bland one. Because in the latest Star Wars, Force Awakens, nobody remembers the pilots.
I just remember Poe. That's it.
Yeah. That's the only pilot. So that's why I was like, well, you can't just be, like, Porkins. Because remember Porkins? Like, he became really famous. Because they're like, oh, yeah, the fat pilot.
Wait. Can I make it's not a challenge, but I'm just curious to think about this. So the original Star Wars series, people have seen those movies a lot of times. Do you think after they just saw it for the first time, that they remember those characters as well?
I think so. I think everybody was like, oh, Wedge. I think they're like, oh, Biggs.
It's like, oh, that dude whose face looked like one big outstretched nostril that was running the whole time.
Oh, Porkins. They're a net. And then the dude that was with Lando in the Return of the Jedi. Like, I bet a lot of people are going, stay on target.
Stay on target.
Like, I think these characters got burnt into the lexicon.
Dude, Admiral Ackbar?
Yeah.
It's a trap.
Oh, that's such a great line, though.
Yeah, so, I mean, like Lazvas said before I jumped on him, my bad, dude. Like, these guys have next to nothing, and they're really remembered. Like, I think it was 86. I think it was 87, right? And I was 5. And I was getting Admiral Ackbar toys. And Return of the Jedi came out in 83. So, I mean, it was probably in the theater for a year and a half. VHS probably came out a lot later. So people really hadn't watched it too many times. And I knew who Admiral Ackbar was. So, I mean, you know, between Porkins and Wedge Antilles, that's awesome. But I'd be Elvis. I'd be Elvis Antilles.
Elvis Antilles.
That's right. And I would have perfect helmet hair like Kylo Ren.
Yeah. Wait, so you mentioned those pilots. You said they had nothing. But unlike episode 43, by the way, the cinematic henchmen who probably have no pension whatsoever, I'll bet that these pilots had a pension that was like at least 60% vested to their spouses or something.
Yeah, because they're part of the rebels.
Or wait, like, oh no, wait, do the rebels have trouble?
They weren't like a big
getting
corporation.
A good money manager?
Oh, that's like, right. There wasn't like a lot of, they weren't a big corporation that just hired faceless people. Yeah. Like these guys, you know, these guys had faces, they had personalities. I don't think they were paid well. I think there was more of like, hey, if we win this, we'll take care of you.
They were so small, like they put in some of their own money and took less pay for profit sharing.
It was a startup.
Yeah, think of the Rebels as like the plucky startup full of like, you know, flannel-wearing hipsters drinking coffee, working on their MacBook Pros.
That's right. Yeah,
that's what they're doing.
And what's wrong with that?
Nothing. It's just, you know, there's no job security in there at all.
At any moment, planets could have blown up. So, I mean, there wasn't much job security. High risk, high reward.
Yeah.
And you're remembered for a long time. I mean, you know, how many people created Apple? You know, how many people started McDonald's? Like, you know, Wedge Antilles, people love him.
So you're saying he's like the Ray Kroc of the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, that's right. He was People Magazine's sexiest pilot of the year a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. But, I mean, that made it all over the newsstands.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's kind of interesting that you mentioned, like, how many people started Apple. And I can, like, talk about that because of the two recent movies about Steve Jobs with Ashton Kutcher and
Fassbender.
Right? But, like, actually, McDonald's, like, I don't know how many people started. Was it one dude? Was it 18?
I think it was brothers, and they got hucked out of it by some dude. There's a movie coming out about it soon.
Is there? Because I was really going to ask, like, where's that movie?
So do you think the Rebels, like, there was a Rebel startup, and then they took it over? Like, they huckstered it from the original Rebels?
Well, I'm pretty sure there was, like, some, you know, some venture capitalist. He just saw this startup, and was like, you know, this looks really promising. And so he just bought them all out. You know, he bought them, like, a nice base on Hoth. Yeah. Bought them, like, all that equipment, and it's just like, all right, listen, like, I'm expecting, like, a certain ROI on this, all right? So I'm expecting, like, at least the destruction of the Death Star. Like give me at least that much. So
a good ROI is a Death Star blown up?
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. You're going to sink some money into, like, a rebellion. I think you
want to see people discussing this at like a panel meeting.
So I think Elvis Antilles, right?
Yeah.
I think he's good for like, so let's say the Star Wars 8 rips off Empire. I'm good for at least Elvis Antilles is good for about 3 AT-ATs before he goes, there's too many. And then he gets blown up.
Where did you get that name, by the way? I'm loving the Elvis Antilles.
Well, there's Wedge Antilles.
Because that's his last name.
Yeah. Okay. And then, so I started thinking like, well, I need to stand out. And I just started with mutton chops. I'd be the mutton chop guy or first mustache guy, like big mustache dude. But that's not even that good. So I was like, I'll just become Elvis.
I think that works, man. That's
Elvis Antilles.
That's a great name.
Yep. And like everyone loves me. I'm dancing, you know, like I helped all the maintenance crew, you know, like I put on shows, you know, I go to like different bases and I perform while I'm not flying.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the galactic version of the USO.
Yeah, Elvis Antilles, one night only.
Mm.
Wait, was it? What's like a good space battles?
Lasers in the night.
Is that the answer to the question?
The rebels bring the fight to you. We could actually write this whole song.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, Mark, what's the next listener question?
Oh, gosh. What animated film should get a live-action remake?
Oh, so many. So many. But by the way, they are really working on a Thundercats, right? That's happening?
I don't know.
Okay. Not that Thundercats is a film, but...
I know Netflix just came out of a new season or a new series of Thundercats recently. Or I might be thinking about Voltron. It was one of those.
Yeah. So... All right. Well, I'm going to go with some anime stuff. And some people may like posit the argument that Tokyo Gore Shock movie trend is basically anime brought to film. But that's like slapstick, hard R exploitation. I want like Vampire Hunter D, Demon City Shinjuku, Wicked City, like the non-exploitative 80s fantasy action future anime movies. I'd like to see some of them, especially Vampire Hunter D, get like an actually seriously approached live action movie. Of course, it'd have a lot of CGI, a la Van Helsing, but not sucking, I'd hope.
Can you add Abraham Lincoln in there?
You could add Abraham Lincoln, who would swing an axe and then turn an entire 3-foot diameter tree into kindling.
You know, I think you could make like an entire podcast talking about like which anime. Like animes need to be turned to live action adaptations. Like, what you have Ghost in the Shell, and you have Akira. Those have been in development forever. And then you also have
Ghost in the Shell. Did that not start filming with ScarJo or no?
Yeah, it just started recently, but it's been talked about for like a long time. Death Note is coming to Netflix as a series, live action series.
Adam Wingard, yeah, and Simon Barrett.
Yeah, yeah,
that one, yeah.
Yeah, and like I don't know, there's like a lot of good animes out there that are like really viable candidates for live action adaptations, but yeah, that's like a whole other podcast.
But hold on now. Death Note already got a live action adaptation.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. Death Note had the series, and then it had a cartoon movie, and then it had a 2006 live action movie, and then in 07 or 08 it had a sequel, and then in another year later it had one where it took the bad guy and made him into a good guy. So they made 3 live action movies starting in 2006 from Death Note.
I can't imagine they were good, were they?
So he is not adapting a show to film. He's adapting an Asian film to American film.
Oh, is that what's going on?
Yeah.
That's a very roundabout way of doing it, I guess.
Well, guys, I was going to say Iron Giant with, like, Jennifer Aniston as the mom and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
Pacific Rim.
I'm going Rockadoodle.
Rockadoodle.
Oh, Elvis, no, wait.
Elvis Rooster.
Is that from the 90s? How old is that?
90s. Rockadoodle.
Wow. That is the 90s, right? I'm not nuts.
I want an Elvis chicken live action film. I want real chicken singing.
Wait, who's going to play it?
A chicken.
But who's going to do the voice?
They're going to teach him everything. Oh, it's going to be Michael Shannon or Kurt Russell, one of them. It's going to be Michael Shannon because he just played Elvis and Elvis. And so basically, it's like the Jungle Book, which is 99% digital, but they call it live action. So it's just going to be Michael Shannon reprising his role as Elvis as a singing chicken.
Nice.
It's like Rockstar, but with a chicken.
Yeah. Okay, now Rockstar is very close and near and dear to my heart. I love that movie.
Really? Yeah, and?
I don't know about Michael Shannon's energy.
Have you seen Elvis and Nixon?
No, I haven't seen that one. Does he have the energy? Did he bring?
I wouldn't be saying it if he didn't. You think Michael Shannon shows up and goes, "I'm not going to bring the energy"?
It depends on the role.
The only energy he's ever brought has been what I would call negative energy.
Have you watched any of his movies?
Yeah, it's all negative energy, though. Whenever he's like really animated, it's negative.
You just love the movie Rockstar, and you're getting angry about that.
No, I mean, like,
you're torpedoing this project because of your love of an obscure Mark Wahlberg project.
Like Bug, or when he played Zod, or when he played that hitman. Like, I can't think of him in an energetic role that was positive.
Well, you haven't watched Elvis and Nixon yet.
I haven't. That's fair.
That is fair.
That's not on HBO yet.
That's on Amazon Prime.
It is? I gotta see that. All right.
I want him to remake Rockstar now.
Whoa.
And then replace the band with chickens.
Whoa! The Fant was in one of those bands.
Too bad. He steals cutlery from hotel rooms.
Oh man.
He's you know, the Fant can play a fox that sneaks into the chicken coop.
That sounds right. No, he's a ocelot.
An ocelot.
All right, Laz, what about you?
So the first thing that jumped to mind was The Incredibles. I feel like you know, it's funny when like the recent Fantastic Four came out, you know, everybody was saying it was a crappy movie, and yeah, it was a crappy movie, but like a lot of people were also saying, like, you know, The Incredibles is basically the best Fantastic Four movie ever made. So I feel
absolutely
they should just do like a live action version of The Incredibles. I don't know, like, yeah, I feel like that would just be like that'd be a great time to watch. Like
so for Mr. Incredible, do you think they could take The Rock but then superimpose Craig T. Nelson's head over it?
I was thinking like Patrick Warburton. I don't know. Or is that like
James?
Oh no.
Oh dear. And that's probably what would really happen.
But Sam Jackson could still be in it. Like Jason Lee could still be in it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I love like that cast. Like I'd actually love to preserve that cast as much as possible.
Yeah. No, yeah. I feel like you just throw Craig T. Nelson in there somewhere.
You need the Craig T.
Yeah,
I love that guy. I think he's just the best, the best actor like ever.
Craig T. Nelson's the best actor ever,
dude. Poltergeist, The Incredibles, Coach, The Devil's Advocate. Need I say more?
Yeah, I mean, probably.
You went so far. I really do love him in Poltergeist, though. I think he plays such an awesome dad in that.
I think he's in The Proposal.
Yeah,
but I didn't like him in that, actually.
You know, this is actually a really interesting question, because there's actually, it seems like there's been a spate of live-action adaptations of animated movies recently. Like, what, you got, like, Beauty and the Beast coming out soon. You got, like, apparently there's a Little Mermaid adaptation come out.
Alice in Wonderland made $1 billion.
Jungle Book,
like, yeah, Jungle Book made like $900 million.
Do you mean the new Alice in Wonderland, the sequel?
No, and the Cinderella made $800 million. Maleficent made like $1 billion, and then this new Alice made like $450 million. But that's like all the Johnny Depp problems and stuff.
So far, it's just been a lot of Disney stuff. Like,
yeah, so. I mean, Beauty and the Beast is going to clear $1 billion.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, that's such a beloved movie.
Disney kind of gets to do whatever they want, because don't forget, they also have Marvel.
But they're doing it right, though, Disney. Like, they're not, like, they're doing it. Like, these movies have A-list directors, cast, music, digital effects. I mean, their budgets are, like, $200 million. Hmm. So, like, Disney's, like, they're not half-assing these remakes. They are, like, it's smart. There's a nice trend. They can sell all the merch again, and people want to see, like, people our age grew up with these Disney movies, or not, you know, some of them. But
yeah,
like,
and I'll see them. Like, I'll take all my nieces to see them.
Exactly. And like, parents are like, I guess I got to go to Beauty and Beast. Shucks. And they're like, awesome.
Yeah.
Like Pete's Dragon, loved it.
Yeah, I did enjoy that. I saw that.
A lot of flannel.
Yeah, and I will say though, Pete's Dragon, that felt like it was made for kids instead of made for audiences. Though, that I mean, if I had to give static criticism.
I mean, it was made for kids.
Yeah. You know what's funny is I kind of had a hard time with this question, because it's like a lot of my favorite animated movies, like, I don't know if they would do, how well they would do in a live action adaptation, you know?
You're like, a huge fan of Adam Sandler's Eight Crazy Nights.
Yeah, I don't know how well that would do.
I've never even seen that.
Yeah.
Beavis and Butthead Do America.
Yeah.
I don't want to see Beavis and Butthead live action. It would scare the shit out of me.
But no, obviously something like, you know, obviously. Like
anytime anyone has ever been on Facebook or Twitter and you've seen like a Beavis and Butthead live action illustration, it's been terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, something like Finding Nemo, like that would just be like really weird. I don't know if that would be like really good or like, I don't know, like I guess Wall-E would be kind of cool, but I feel like it wouldn't have like that same charm.
Short Circuit. We've seen it.
I don't know. I feel like that's really hit or miss, though.
They'd have to find a lot of fat people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they can come down to South Texas where I am, man.
Oh, actually, Mark, I think your original suggestion, Iron Giant, that would have been a really good adaptation, I think.
Like Jennifer Aniston could be the mom.
Yeah. She's about the right age these days.
Yeah.
Find some kid. Get like the robot would look awesome.
Yeah.
And like, as many people who love Iron Giant, not that many people have watched it. It's like a cult film. So I think it could be ripe for, you know, being remade. People are like, just re-release the animated film. But
it's interesting you say that because I like Vin Diesel. I have no problem with animated films or kid films. And yet, for whatever reason, I've only ever seen little bits of Iron Giant flipping through the channels. I've never seen it.
It's a good movie. I don't think it's on Netflix anymore, but maybe Amazon.
I mean, it's worth it. It's a heart wrencher.
Yeah, it's very sad. Sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
Does he die? Don't tell me. Never mind. Don't tell me.
Well, Elvis Antilles comes out of nowhere and saves him.
Good.
Okay, that's the answer to the that question, I think.
Elvis Antilles
saves the Iron Giant.
comes off from the horizon, playing the Indiana Jones music theme.
Dun, 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 dun. He was a pile of scraps.
All right, that does it for this segment, a very spirited segment of listener questions. Thank you once again to our wonderful listeners for those amazing questions. Sorry we didn't answer them, but hey, maybe one day we will. One day.
Well, we did answer that one a couple weeks ago.
That was a fluke.
Yeah. That's like Indiana Jones, the one we don't talk about, is that's the listener question we don't talk about.
What? You mean Last Crusade?
Yep.
Yeah, the last one that he did, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Loving Good. I think you have the topic for this week.
Yeah, you know, so let's wind back the clocks to Comic-Con. Back at Comic-Con, they were going to show a new trailer for a movie that already had a trailer out called The Woods that everyone was really, really excited about, right? And it was this Adam Wingard movie written by Simon Barrett. And, you know, they're a good team. They've done most of their projects together. And the original trailer for The Woods was super creepy and everyone thought they were going to get something special. And then when they showed the new trailer for it at San Diego Comic-Con, they revealed that it was actually The Blair Witch 2016. And of course, the internet was lit afire with people who were thrilled about the new Blair Witch coming out and others that were saying, I don't know about another Blair Witch movie. And so we thought we'd dedicate this episode to the Blair Witch movies. We're not going to touch a lot on part two because this new movie, Blair Witch 2016, is a direct follow-up to the Blair Witch Project 1999. But why don't we start by talking about how we felt about this trailer, and then we'll talk about that is the release of the trailer, the San Diego Comic-Con trailer, back when it was shifted from The Woods. And then we'll talk about the old movie, and then we'll wrap it around to the new.
When I heard the news, I just went...
When you heard that they revealed that it was actually the Blair Witch Project?
I was like, hey, Adam Wingard, the director of You're Next, and The Guest, and Simon Barrett, his co-writer, are making a brand new horror film that a lot of people are buzzing about. I was like, awesome, new horror, new blood, great, can't wait. You know, the poster said it was the scariest movie ever made. I thought that was a lie. But then I hear, oh, Blair Witch 2. I'm like, great. I thought we were getting a new original horror film. and we're going to get Uber Blair Witch turned to 11 and 17 years later. And
so what were your feelings about the trailer before that?
I mean,
you were excited.
I had never saw the trailer. I never watched.
Before San Diego Comic-Con, you didn't see the teasers?
No, I was just excited that he was making a movie called The Woods. I didn't watch the trailers.
Oh, you see, I had seen the trailers, and in those trailers, that they weren't long. They weren't like 10-second teasers, but they weren't like, you know, 90-second to 2-minute trailers. They were maybe, I don't know, 40 seconds or something. They had people running through the woods. You could tell there was some found footage. And I was pretty excited, though. Like, it looked cool, but you would never have known it was about Blair Witch.
Great.
But I was excited when I saw those trailers. So when they then announced that this was actually Blair Witch, because I was already excited about those trailers, I kind of just transmuted that excitement to the notion of a new Blair Witch movie, which I figured would be a remake. And I only figured out a couple weeks before I saw it that it was in fact meant to be a direct follow-up to the Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
But let's wind the clock back to 1999.
Dude, I was working in a movie theater in 1999. And all the employees stayed to about 2 a.m. to watch the screening. And I remember walking out of the theater probably like around 3:30, 4 a.m.
That's a rough time.
Like, totally wrecked, like really stressed out. I thought the ending was perfect. I actually didn't know about all the theories until today. And I just walked out thinking what I just saw was new. It was fresh. I'm exhausted. What an ending, right? I watched the new one today in a theater by myself. Right? By myself in a dark, big theater. I almost fell asleep. So, and this movie, I watch at, like, 2 a.m. So, like, I don't stay up late. So, well, I was young back then, too. But the original was so fresh, so unique. And then this one happened 17 years after everyone sort of milked the Blair Witch Project. So there was nothing new or fresh. I mean, it kind of expanded the world, but I think in 1999, the movie exploded. It made what? Like, with inflation, I think it pulled in something like $360 million on a $75,000 budget. Mm. So, I mean, it was a cultural phenomenon. That weekend, that and my best friend's Runaway Bride came out, and our entire theater was sold out. Like, every theater was sold out. So, like, this was like, I got to see the phenomenon. People are puking. I had to clean that up. That wasn't cool. That wasn't a fun phenomenon. But actually, that summer, a lot of people puked in theaters between South Park because they were drunk and Blair Witch. But it was new. It was fresh. Like, it was different. And I still love it. I still think the ending is perfect. That movie has stuck with me, and I just think it's good.
We addressed the hype, right, that led up to San Diego Comic-Con and then feelings afterwards. What about the hype back in 1999? Because back in 1999, like, it was kind of – I mean, the internet existed, but it was a totally different landscape. There weren't movie websites and bloggers all over the place. It wasn't a readily accessible and every household spoiler-rich minefield of clickbait to ruin everything you could possibly be surprised by. And it was back before trailers revealed every big reveal in the trailers. So – people saw this and they were wondering, like, holy shit, is this real?
Yeah, those actors had to, like, stay under the radar. On IMDb, I just read the actress, what, Heather
Donahue
she,
or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Donahue. She had to play on IMDb. They said she was dead because IMDb had just come out, so she couldn't work, so she wasn't making any money. Her car broke down underneath a Blair Witch billboard, and she had no money to, like, fix her car.
Oh.
Seriously,
man.
And that kind of wrecked their careers because that's all they've sort of been known for. But that was a phenomenon. Like, I know people throw that word around a lot, but that movie, for any horror film, without the luxury of 3D and all that, and to be R-rated to make $360 million, like, that's crazy. Aside, like, it's – I mean, that's – I don't know, people were buzzing about it. Like between like Sixth Sense and Blair Witch and those movies, like there was pretty rich time for really buzz about horror films.
Yeah, like Blair Witch though, people were actually questioning when they walked out of the theaters opening weekend, like, was that real footage? And they couldn't just go online and look it up and within 5 minutes see enough articles to know the answer. Like that was a, like, someone I've on Facebook, I've kind of been going back and forth with a lot of people about the original and what, you know, what I think of it and what I think of the new one. And when I talk about the old one, it's like, yeah, the old one was amazing. But right now, honestly, and I just saw this last night. I just rewatched the original. And I just, wait. I was bored to tears.
How many times have you seen it?
Hold on. About 3 times. I saw it in the theater. I saw it a year after the theater. And then I just saw it last night.
Okay.
But so when I saw it last night, by the way, it was totally fresh. Like, I just knew what everyone knew, even if they hadn't seen it. Like, I hadn't seen it in 15 years at that point. And it bored me to tears. Now, hold on. It was boring to me, but it was extremely interesting. I really appreciated what I was watching. So I guess, like, I was very mentally stimulated. But in terms of jumps or excitement, like, it was never exciting to me.
Well, it's a slow burn. It builds to, like, the end and the building paranoia. So, like,
wasn't exciting. The end was flat.
It wasn't like there were some jump scares, but it was all meant to like build their paranoia throughout the film. So I don't think it was supposed to be like a loud noises picture. Like it was, it builds.
There are a lot of slow, quiet films that can get me anxious seeing them multiple times over, and this is not one of them. It's not. When I saw it the first time, it got me worked up a little more. This time it was. But again, I thought it was very interesting, though. I thought it was cool. I love being introduced to those characters. And, like, if I saw that same movie now, I'd be like, the acting in this is terrible. And then but, you know, it's like you got to take yourself out of it. This was found footage before found footage was a thing. And hold on, I know a lot of people out there are like, hold on, I can give you 20 websites that are like, you know, 10 found footage movies that were up before Blair Witch. But found footage wasn't something that people were tired of, and people weren't calling it a subgenre in 1999.
Well, it was like the real world. It was like the Real World season one. Like those people didn't really know what they're like. There had been shows like that, but they didn't really quite know what they were getting into, and that set the tone for all the following seasons.
Right. And so now that was what was interesting to me, though, with the original Blair Witch, watching it just last night, was like I was thinking like, oh, the acting's terrible. And I was thinking like, wait a minute, they're real people. Like, yeah, I mean, and then it's like it bothered me for about 8 seconds. And then I just started like enjoying that aspect of it, that this was just like you and me recording, you know, changing a carburetor or something. Like there's no reason for it to look like good acting. And then I started to just really like it and go with the flow. I didn't even remember thinking that in 99. I don't know what the hell I was thinking in 99. But I thought that was cool. And I liked being introduced to the characters, and I liked the way that they presented it to feel real. You know, like now it's so cookie cutter, isn't it? All these movies about paranormal investigators. This, that, or the other. Whether you're talking about Grave Encounters, which I did like, or Episode 50, which I hated. There's loads of them. But, you know, it's like it's very formulaic. At the time, it wasn't formulaic. They kind of did, they might have made that formula, which is kind of neat. What do you think about that?
Go for it, Laz.
I don't think, was Blair Witch like the very first? It wasn't the first found footage movie, right?
Like, oh no, it was like the maybe the 25th found footage movie.
But it was definitely the most popular, the first popular found footage movie that kind of it blazed a trail. Like it broke new ground. Like up until that point, like no one had ever seen like a found footage movie before, you know, outside of like some dumb home videos, like some like maybe someone's kid made or something.
There was one huge one. There was one huge one. It was Cannibal Holocaust. But the thing is that Cannibal Holocaust was 50% found footage and 50% what was considered to be real world. So
even then, Cannibal Holocaust
like totally
is like
a found footage movie.
Cannibal Holocaust is like kind of like a video store, like a workhorse. Like it's the, you know, it's it made its money through like video stores. But like Blair Witch, like it was the first one that made an impact at the box office. Like
sure.
So like it was a new experience of people like sitting in a theater and experiencing this like, you know, in a group setting for the first time. And it was just like, you know, people were just like, I think people were just excited to see something new and experience it with other people who had never seen anything like this before.
Yeah, and the 90s was such like a weird time for horror too. Like it was mostly crappy. And then you had Scream. And so during this time, they were probably loaded with like a bunch of teen slasher films. I Know What You Did Last Summer, the Valentine's Day or Urban Legends. And then Blair Witch comes around.
Yeah. Like Blair Witch was so low quality in terms of production value compared to like all the other horror movies that were coming out. Like what Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer. You had like all these beautiful 20 somethings as the stars. And like they were like, you know, they're really sexy. But then like you look at Blair Witch, you have like these three kind of average people. Like they're not ugly, but they're not like Sarah Michelle Gellar or Jennifer Love Hewitt. For sure.
I mean, they were regular people, yeah.
Yeah, and like, they weren't actually actors either. They were kind of semi-professional actors. Like, I think they just, I could be wrong, but I think they just answered like a flyer or something. Like, but they weren't like, you know, established actors. So it just added to the illusion of authenticity of Blair Witch. Like, Blair Witch has had like all these different things going for it at once. Like, it was a perfect storm. Really, of all these different things.
And that Heather, too, I thought she was really interesting, the main character.
Yeah.
Because she was sort of allowed to be unlikable. Hmm. Like, you know, the compass scenes and all of that. Like, a lot of people find her to be really annoying. But I thought it was really kind of neat to do that to the character.
And for the occasional listener who saw the new movie but didn't see the old one, when you say the compass scene...
Oh, well, so the original Blair Witch, they have a compass. They think they're going south, I believe, and that just leads them in a circle.
Mm. Right. So, they think that they're going the same direction the whole time, and they end up back at their campground, something that recurs in the new movie, basically. But and then they all just start turning on each other like crazy.
Yeah. And you know what's wild is I think, Laz, you and I have talked about this before. I've never thought about the theories of Blair Witch Project. I've always walked out of that movie just satisfied.
Right. So do you just mean the first movie by itself when you say that?
Yes.
Okay. So what theories?
Well, let me finish what I was saying.
Okay, sorry.
I walked out of that film just happy, or just feeling that ending was very satisfying. Mm-hmm. I didn't ask any questions. I didn't say who killed him, what happened to that, whose teeth, who put these things out. I never asked one question about Blair Witch because the ending just kind of made me happy. Like, it just worked for me. It just – I was like this like he's in the corner. They established that before, and boom, she's out. Like, I don't even know what's going to happen after that. But so I started reading today after talking to John, and there are these theories where – There's three people. A lot of people believe that Josh is the guy who goes missing. A lot of people think that the Blair Witch doesn't do the killing, that the Blair Witch gets other people to do the killing. So she had Josh moaning, pulling out his teeth. Mm-hmm. And so he's the one that put the other guy in the corner, and he's the one that killed Heather whapped Heather when she ran into that room. So I started reading all these like theories about it today, and I was like, oh yeah. Like, but all these years, I've probably watched it six times, never once thought about my world to these insane time portals and like alternate dimensions and different witches or different people doing the killing. And, but I never once considered that in Blair Witch. Like, I never thought about the compass. Like, I just thought that they were. I just thought that they were lost. Like, it's interesting. So I do think that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I think for me, the reason why I never looked into it is because I was just too scared to. like the curiosity was there, but I'm just like, I don't know if I want to learn more.
Yeah. Like, it was just such a, to me, you know, regardless of what other people think, I just think it's a, I think it's a perfect horror ending, right. Because it just, it hit me hard. I don't think I've been, I don't think there's been a horror ending that has hit me as hard as Blair Witch.
Sure.
So, but yeah, so all these theories are out now, which Eleven Good knows of plenty.
Yeah. Well, before we get to those theories, I think now is a good time to take a break, actually. But yeah.
We'll save the
Yeah, we'll save the theories.
Can we come up with a conspiracy theory about how we're breaking before we talk about conspiracy theories?
Sure.
Thank you.
Like, all right. Why? Why are we doing it?
Robert.
Mm-hmm.
John.
Yes.
Complete this sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Five.
Four.
Three.
Two.
One.
What are we doing?
Counting.
Counting what?
Down?
Counting down what?
Everything? Everything and anything.
Anything and everything?
That's right. The three of us, we count down from five down to one. Top five, everything and anything that you can think of. You want to know the top five shittiest bands? You want to know the top five movies? Listen, Shark Dropper Studios, sharkdropper.com.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. That was a spirited discussion we had on all the theories. Not just on Blair Witch, but also Lost, Fringe, MASH, The Honeymooners. It's all connected.
Yeah.
It's all one expanded universe.
Yeah. Homeward Bound 2.
Yeah. Not Homeward Bound 1, though.
No.
Just the second one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right, speaking of making weird connections, time to answer another list of questions.
Yeah.
Right, Mark?
Let's do it. So, after Olympus and London has fallen... Oh, this is from John, by the way. Another John. After Olympus and London has fallen, where should Gerard Butler go to murder more people?
So, he's killed so many people, like...
Okay, I got one for you guys.
Okay.
Two Egg, Florida.
Two Egg, Florida.
Are you talking like the Great Gatsby with a West Egg and an East Egg?
Nope, there's a city in Florida called Two Egg, Florida.
Huh.
And local legend says that there's a Bigfoot. So here's
what county are we talking in Florida?
Jackson County, northern Florida.
Really?
So basically Two Egg, right? But here's how it goes down. So, I was also thinking either Toad Suck has fallen.
Toadsuck, Arkansas?
Yeah, Idiotville has fallen. Ding Dong has fallen. I was also going to do Sioux Falls has fallen, but that was too... so I had to do Two Egg, Florida, because there's a Bigfoot-type creature called the Two Egg Stump Jumper.
Wait, hold on. I can look that up.
And so, for me, though...
If I look up Two Egg Stump Jumper...
That's right. So, for
that's
me...
A thing.
So, Jerry Butler and Aaron Eckhart... See, they've run out of villains. They had, you know, they've gone Middle Eastern. They've gone, you know, like Asian. So what they need to do is we need a local problem, right? We need local bad guys. So they're going around. They go to Two Egg, Florida, right? And Eckhart's kind of, he's shaking hands. He's grabbing babies. You know, he's eating waffles. He's eating two eggs. You know, he's just kind of campaigning, champagning. And a local militia comes up. You know, they all have a huge gunfight starts out. And then it's basically just Aaron Eckhart and Jerry Butler murdering people in Two Egg, Florida. Two Egg has fallen. And then they come across a big Yeti, right?
Hmm.
And the Yeti's part of the militia. But then they sway the Yeti. And then the Yeti joins forces with them. And there's an amazing shot where Aaron Eckhart, Jerry Butler, and the Stump Jumper are on ATVs with machine guns mowing down redneck militia.
What would the poster for that look like?
Oh, gosh. Two Egg has fallen.
Oh, dear.
We got
it's got like Humpty Dumpty crying.
We got some bad eggs.
Oh, man.
Like, Jerry Butler isn't even steering. He just, like, his ATV. He's driving it, like, with his knees, just guiding it with his two machine guns.
Yeah. I want to see, like, the trailer for this. Because I don't know if I want to commit to seeing the movie, but I definitely want to see a trailer.
And there needs to be one shot where the Stump Jumper is on an ATV and he hits a jump and he does like a fancy trick. And then he just lands on a militia guy's head and explodes it.
Hey, since this is in Florida, is there going to be a jet ski scene?
No.
Oh.
Because it's really northern Florida.
Oh, okay.
So if it was more on like the panhandle, like if this was like Wakulla has fallen or like Weekiwachee has fallen,
yeah,
there would definitely be terrible jet ski scenes. But I feel like the stump jumper on a jet ski, like really furry Bigfoots getting soaked is funny.
Hmm.
You know? So I wouldn't like it, but I would definitely put it towards the top of the list. But I want this, I want the stump jumper doing ATV tricks.
Sure. You know what? I think I'll watch it. I'll commit to it. I don't know if I like it.
I want to go to a restaurant and watch it. And the restaurant I want to go to is called Stump Knockers, which is just north of Gainesville, Florida. And it's this place where back like 15 years ago when I was in college, you could go for all you can eat catfish and hush puppies.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
I know, right? What a country woodsy Floridian place to be to watch a movie like that.
So like, think about it like this. It would be basically like Hard Target, because that's filmed in like the bayous, meets London Has Fallen and Olympus Has Fallen. So just wooded murder.
Two Egg Has Fallen.
Yeah, Two Egg Has Fallen.
So I kind of was, I had a like this bifurcated approach, right? Like in my head, part of me thought, what was that Guy Pearce movie where he was in space?
Lockout?
Part of me thought that, right? It was kind of like, oh, let's send Gerard Butler to the moon to go kill moon terrorists. But then the realistic part had me thinking of like the Rush Hour series and how, you know, it's like it starts in America, goes to China, goes to France. They just keep trying to make it more global and include a bigger cross-section of people. And so I was trying to think of like Gerard Butler, like where's he going to go, Hong Kong or Tokyo, and fight like triad terrorists or Yakuza, and they're going to be saying things like, I don't understand the things that are coming out of your mouth. Like, is he just gonna scot it up like he did in Gods of Egypt? Like,
like, I think he's going to go from Sioux Falls to Cedar Falls to Niagara Falls.
All the falls.
And he's just going to be racially insensitive in all of them.
He's
racially insensitive to his own heritage.
It's like all these people are like talking to him, and he's just like, I don't know what you're saying. And then he snaps their heads off.
I just turned into a cave troll. He's snapping heads off.
Well, he doesn't just kill people in these movies. He kills people.
That's true. It's like if five bullets would have done it in Die Hard, and by five bullets, I mean five bullets would have done it five times, Gerard Butler's using like 80. Like, he's turning you into hash.
Like, just what?
Breakfast hash.
Ooh, there we go. I like that.
Like Scrapple.
Nice. Okay. I guess my turn.
Yeah.
All right. So I thought it'd be cool if we took the dynamic duo to like a fictional setting. So I kind of had two answers. That's probably kind of cheating.
Narnia?
Yeah. No, I think, so my first answer is maybe Middle Earth. Like, maybe, like, the Shire has fallen. Maybe, like, Aaron Eckhart gets, like, captured by, like, Ring Wraiths or, like, Orcs or something. So, Gerard Butler, I don't know. Like, I haven't really fleshed it out in my head yet. But
he would just murder everything in Middle Earth.
Yeah, like, I feel like he would just run out of ammo like really quickly, and he would just like learn how to use his sword like really quick. Like a bow and arrow, like he just picks it up instantly. I'm like, whoa.
And he's and he at takes Gandalf's fireworks and attaches them to the arrows and just blows people up.
Yeah. At the end of the movie, he's wearing Gandalf's robe. Gerard the Bloody.
He has a big white beard. But everything else about him is normal. He's still wearing a suit and holding a semi-automatic weapon with a long white beard.
Ah, I come to you now at the turn of the tide.
I don't know what accent that was, but I liked it last
time. That Balrog wouldn't even be able to fight. Jerry Butler would just like stick a grenade in its butt. Yeah.
So my second answer is I think it'd be hilarious if you remember that movie Elysium, where it had that giant floating city where a lot of the rich people lived? It was just like a movie called Elysium Has Fallen, where literally Elysium Has Fallen due to Gerard
Elysium Butler. Elysium did fall in that movie.
But I wanted to be due to Gerard Butler.
So he's just blowing up a bunch of people with polos?
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's on Elysium just destroying white collar people?
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be funny. He goes up to like a tennis match and like blows up all four of them.
Yeah.
Like, he goes hole in one. Wait, what?
Are
they playing golf? He's like, you know, golf comes from Scotland. And he just brutally murders people with like a golf club.
I was like, well, now I do.
But you won't remember. What?
Boom.
I love about these movies, they're so like 80s. Like, I was watching London Has Fallen, and at first I was like, I kind of like this. Then it got so stupid. There's a scene, right, where Aaron Eckhart walks out of a closet, and Jerry Butler goes, I've been waiting for you to walk out the closet. And then they both go, ha, 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 ha. It's such like an old school, stupid, like, movie that just plays like it should have, like, Charles Bronson.
But he didn't do a lot of laughing. Yeah. I know what you mean.
I love Jerry Butler running around Middle Earth just murdering people.
Yeah.
He seems like just a strikingly good orc. Like, yeah. a strikingly good-looking orc is what I mean. Yeah, like, just for toughness.
I see him as, like, a rider of Rohan.
Yeah, with a machine gun when they're charging in.
Whoa.
Oh, my gosh. I want to see him battle a cave troll.
Oh, yeah.
He would, like, chop its head off. There would be a 30-minute scene where he's just sawing its head off with a serrated blade.
Oh, that's rough.
Like, that's how bloody those movies are.
What was that Fassbender and Olga Yurylenko movie?
Centurion.
Wasn't there a scene where that girl, where Olga was just, like, chopping and chopping and chopping a guy's head off? Is that what you're thinking of for Butler?
Yeah, and he's just, like, he's Olga Kurylenko-ing a cave troll.
Yeah.
That's never been said on this planet. Like, if Jerry Butler was in Descent, like, those creatures would run from him.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll bet. They'd know. They'd know from the scent of him.
Just Jerry Butler.
The scent has fallen. That doesn't make sense. Well, why don't we just make that the answer? The scent has fallen.
The scent has fallen.
Okay. Well, thank you for that wonderful listener question. Let me good. I think you're about to expand on the theories for the Blair Witch Project, right?
Time warp.
Yeah, time warp or something like that.
Well, you know, we can come back to it because we were talking about the end of the first Blair Witch, and when we get to the end of the Blair Witch, we can come back to all of our conspiracy theories. But so the new Blair Witch, right? It's a direct sequel. And it has Heather, the main character from the original The Blair Witch Project. It's her little brother, 17 years later, who sees some new video on YouTube that someone posted about the Black Hills. And he just feels like he needs to investigate this. He needs closure. He wonders if his sister is even still out there, but it's more about closure and just solving this. So they're going to investigate, and it's him and a group of more people. Just like the original Blair Witch, we get to meet them in the beginning. It's much less sincere to me, anyway, the experience of it. But they meet some new characters who kind of bring us in, and they're going to lead us out into the woods. And what'd you think about meeting these new characters, this brother, his colleagues, and these weird backwoods people in Maryland who posted the video that got him interested?
I think nothing.
Like, blah.
I think they're just like, they could have had cardboard cutouts, and like someone could have been standing behind it talking, and I would have found them more interesting.
That's... Ooh. I pretty much agree. Like I commented earlier that upon rewatch, I thought part one was boring, but not uninteresting. And whereas this, like the first 15, 20 minutes of this movie was just like, I don't know, like Indian rug burning my arm hair.
No, like I don't think it's the actor's fault, right? I'll say that. I just think I'm just so tired of Because found footage acting has become very found footage acting. Like, you know, when, like, you're just, it's found footage acting, and they're just doing it to a T. And there's, like, really no defining. The only person I liked was the girlfriend, because she manicured her toes before the trip. I thought that was cute. Like, that was, like, the only thing I remember about them.
Yeah, I kind of.
Listen,
they were very meh.
Like, I've known both you guys for a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you guys were like, hey, my sister, Blair Witch, 17 years ago, do you want to go out in the woods unprepared with me to hunt him down? I'd be like, no.
Yeah, maybe next weekend.
Yeah, you know, I just run. Like, and so these four people are going to go look for this woman who went missing in the woods, what, 18 years ago, 17 years ago, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
And then
disappeared when he was a little boy.
And it's like, they're like bringing all this stuff. Oh, we got GPS and we have drones and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, guys, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
First of all, you know, if this wasn't a horror movie, if you just told me like, hey, me, Mark and Laz, let's all, you know, go hike the Appalachian Trail. But hey, instead of hiking the Appalachian Trail, let's go off the trail and not be on any marked trail. But hey, we'll have GPS and a drone with a battery that could die, even though we have spare batteries. I really don't give a shit. Like, we're going to go miles off of known trails and be miles away, dozens of miles away from humanity. Like, I would not be comforted by that.
No.
Like, that would not make me feel safe.
I'd be like, you know what? I was thinking about it, but then you told me all of that.
No, like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Now, hold on, though. These characters, though, right? Like, they're like 22, 25. Like, that's their age range. Now, Mark, I seem to remember a weekend that I came up to Tallahassee when we were both undergrads, when we were 22 to 25. And I think that in the middle of that night, if I asked you to go fight a Balrog with me, you would have said, I'm buying the bus tickets.
Well, because Balrogs are easy. Like, Balrogs, like, when I'm drunk, I feel like I could knock a Balrog out.
Back then, you probably could have.
Yeah, but I ain't messing with no witches.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I'm just saying, like, these kids were more kids, though. Like, they are not. We're all in our 30s. These people are in their mid or early 20s.
Yeah,
like,
but
they're a little dumber.
I just don't see a world where I would have done that. I never really liked the woods. I'll enjoy a nice day hike, but I'm not like an Uber camper.
Yeah. So they go out there, right, though. For whatever reason, his friends don't think that this is weird. And we'll just pretend that before this movie started, they talked about it for a long time, I suppose. And they end up going out there with these strangers who they meet, who kind of force their way into this Blair Witch investigation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they go into the woods. And so far, it's feeling a lot like the original, except they bump across some new people along the way, right? They pull an unexpected journey, and they meet some people on the way. They make some new fucking – sorry.
Jerry Butler.
They make some new friends on the way. But so they go out there, and it's feeling a lot like the same movie. And they're using their drones. They're establishing their technology. It's pretty stale to me. And then
trees start falling.
Right. There are weird noises, right? And then the Blair Sasquatch is evidently going on, because we're hearing these trees falling. And just to backtrack for a second, I think it's interesting that when I was watching this movie – right, and at night they're hearing noises and everything. It reminded me of this movie that we saw and reviewed in a podcast called Willow Creek, about a Bigfoot. It was a found footage movie with all these weird sounds in the woods. And then the original Blair Witch had a follow-up movie by the same director called Exists, and it was a Bigfoot movie. And everything is just Bigfoots, it seems.
Yeah, just – and, like, someone had a theory that one of these witches, like, one of the people that died in the water can control nature. But, like, why would you control a tree to fall to scare teenagers? If I was a tree, right, and this witch was like, hey, man, fall. I'd be like, why? I'm like 300 years old. I want to scare these 20-somethings. No. You know, just rattle my branches. You want one of my branches? Take it.
So we're talking about trees, and we're talking about manipulation. So in this movie, we learn a little bit more about the Blair Witch mythology from our unexpected journey, new friends that are met along the way, right? And they point out that the Blair Witch was captured by the townspeople. What was it, like the 1500s or 1600s? I don't know. But she's captured by the townspeople. She's tied to a tree. And that was the standard myth and left to die. And
Stretch Armstrong. She had Stretch Armstrong.
But then they add in this movie that they tied heavy rocks to her arms and legs so that by the time she died, her limbs would have been kind of stretched out, if you will. And then when they went back to find her, she was gone. Okay, so there's some, you know, undead witch wandering the woods supposedly with dislocated shoulder sockets. who now can control tell trees to fall with very powerful telekinesis.
Yeah, and I mean really jerkily telling trees to fall.
There was a lot of that, wasn't there? Like she was like deforesting.
This lady should be hired to be an arborist or work at craft fairs.
So, all right, so eventually they wake up. And there are stick men hanging. Remember the stick men? And the stick men were in part
here
one.
Here the theories come.
So, well, no, the first stick men, though, they were from our unexpected journey friends.
Oh, yeah.
But then later in the movie, there are yet more, just an unreasonably large number of stick men hanging around. And some of them are huge. And they're like, oh, they're like over explaining it to us, I guess. They're like, oh my God, there's so many and they're so big. A couple people couldn't have possibly done this overnight. And it's like, all right, well, fine. I buy that. Thank you for explaining that, exposition guy. And so there's all this stuff out. And now we're assuming, okay, it's Blair Witch magic. And remember when the girl panics? And she's like, she calls it bullshit and she breaks one.
Yeah.
And then one of their unexpected journey friends, Talia, I think her name was, when they break the stick man, she pulls a Toby from Paranormal Activity 3 and her back just flips in half. Yeah. How'd you feel about that?
I think at this point I was falling asleep. I saw it and I just went, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, because it looked like someone attached a shake weight to the camera during this scene. Like,
well, that's most of the movie from this point on.
Like, it's just, there was no suspense for me. There was no, like, the time pour. Like, oh, gosh. Now, I mean, listen, I'm all for a body snapping, right? Final Destination 5, you know, Driving Miss Daisy. Platoon, pitch perfect, mm-hmm. Safety not guaranteed.
Yeah,
Boyhood, About Time. But yeah, so this one didn't. I don't know. What'd you think about the body smushing? So basically, she broke the craft fair stuff, and then a woman got smushed in half,
as if it was a voodoo doll representing her.
So maybe she became one.
Good question. And then, you know, there was the girl who hurt her foot in the stream, like she cut her foot, and then later it's infected and it's like pulsating or something. And then yet later in the movie, she pulls something out, and online you can find freeze frames of it. And she was pulling out a miniature stick man from her wound in her, which is now in her calf, as if it's like metastasized or something. And she pulls a little stick man out of her calf, basically. And, like, and theories online are that she's turning into a Blair Witch, or she's turning into a denizen of the Blair Witch Woods, or, like, it's kind of getting – the movie's getting a little crazy now.
Yeah, they think that Ashley is becoming something like Ellie, who's, like, a part of the woods. So she's going to become, like, a stick figure.
Ooh. Which – of all the theories out there, that one I just find annoying. No, that annoys me.
Yeah.
Because we're going to get into a lot of these time warp theories. And fine. You know what? Fine. They're interesting and they're fun to talk about, whether I agree with them or not. But she cut her foot in a creek and got infected with a freshwater Blair Witch parasite that turns her into some Blair Witch whatever the hell. No. No. I'm drawing the line.
Well, you know, the writer, Barrett, actually said that wasn't the Blair Witch at the end. It was Ellie Kedward.
Like she had transformed into that?
Yeah, the writer said that Ellie is doing the killing for the Blair Witch.
Wait. So the monster that we see at the end that we'll talk about later is her.
Ellie Kedward.
She turns into that.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Mark,
you just...
I've gone cross-eyed.
I mean, yeah, exactly. You just Austin Powered me.
Like, yeah, so, this is what the writer says.
Oh.
So, like...
so upsetting.
He says, at the end of the movie, we see a tree-like creature running amok in Rustin Parr's cabin. That's not the Blair Witch, Barrett confirms. Or Groot from Guardians of the Galaxy. It's Ellie Kedward, now made of branches. We see hints that Ashley's suffering the same fate. So she's...
So at the end of the movie, now that we're talking about it, right?
Yeah.
What we see, which, by the way, to me, looks like a gangly-limbed, pale, hairless monster from Doom or Resident Evil.
Yeah.
Right? And with the shaky cam, it's just like that game, right? Where you keep turning back and forth because it's the big scary monster and you're like, oh, I don't have the BFG yet, so I'm going to get killed. So I have to go run. And so this is in the house at the end. And we see this gangly thing. And to me, it's like a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not a standard Bigfoot, mind you. The Blair Sasquatch is different because she's like, she has not had any campers to eat since 1999. So she's very thin now. And she got all stretched out when she was hung to the tree with the rocks tied to her limbs, right? And she doesn't have hair anymore because she's malnourished. So she's a hairless Bigfoot. She's hiding in the woods. And the stick men are when people wander off paths, she makes sticks, like, because she's a Bigfoot. She's just doing crafts.
She's a stump jumper.
Oh.
She's a stump jumper. She's a stump jumper in Jackson County.
Where's Gerard Butler? The Blair Witch has fallen.
But no, honestly, me hearing that, like, oh, that's one of the characters, that's horrible. That's annoying.
Yeah, so here's an interview recently. Lane reveals early on that there's more to Ellie Kedward's story than we previously realized. She wasn't simply burned alive. This is a woman who got stretched out. She became Stretch Armstrong. The original Blair townsfolk strapped her to a homemade vise, stretching her out into a shape resembling the stick figures. At the end of the movie, we see a tree-like creature running amok in Rustin Parr's cabin. Yeah, so I'll send you the link for this interview.
Yeah, and by the way, would you ever describe that as a tree-like creature?
No.
No, that was a long-limbed, gangly, undead monster from Doom or Resident Evil. That's what that was.
And then the writer also referenced passages from The Cult of the Blair Witch, which suggests that Ellie Kedward could speak to the forest and command the trees.
Oh, it's so soul crushing.
Do you want to read this video before we talk a while?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I'm glad I didn't encounter that one. I'm glad.
Because, yeah, the writer's talking about it.
Oh. Well, okay. So
the Blair Witch, like, sometimes they looked at that stump jumper and they didn't die. Apparently, if you look at the Blair Witch, you die.
Hmm.
Well, maybe they just didn't look long enough.
Apparently, I think this goes back to the theory from the first one where this Blair Witch has other people do the killing, because that one dude, the
guy they referenced,
yeah, Rustin Parr, yeah, he did the killing, and he said that she told him. So maybe the Blair Witch is just kind of like Thanos sitting in a chair.
So. As we see what's going on in this movie, what we're told from the writers or not, It's like a lot of this movie, other than the fact that we see a monster, right, and a freshwater parasite that makes no sense. But other than seeing those things, this movie is very much echoing a lot of the plays from the first movie, right? They're pulling kind of like a 2011 The Thing, a Star Wars Episode 7, a Jurassic World, a Cabin Fever, a Ghostbusters remake. Like, they're playing on all the things, all the high notes that we loved of the first one in this one, even though this one is meant to be a continuation.
Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's the corners, there's the filming, they get lost, they walk in circles, there's the stick figures, there's someone who goes missing. What do you think about the time portals were new?
So the time was kind of addressed in the first one, kind of. It was heavily addressed in the second one, and then in this third one, they were just, like, hitting us with a hammer. So... But some of the theories that people could read about online, if they were to search around, one that's kind of radical in my opinion, but it's the most interesting one to talk about, is the suggestion that our characters really did see Heather in the house at the end of The Blair Witch 2016, and that's Heather from The Blair Witch Project 1999. And the idea is that Heather went into the woods in 1999, and time was distorted. And in this case, it went very slowly. Time passed very slowly when they were in the woods. So over the 17 years that her little brother was growing up, and by the time that he went to investigate her, she might have just been getting to the house when he, 17 years later, was arriving to the same house. And then the pictures in the corner... Even though in the film, the film screenshots have a different background in the corner, it was loosely suggested that he, in the corner at the end, the brother, was the person we saw standing in the corner in the original Blair Witch, and that he therefore found his own tape that was left.
Whoa.
Boom! Lazavath! That just happened!
Did it?
React.
I'm speechless. React. I'm speechless.
But that's the most popular theory that people are defending or refuting online about the time loop. And there are a lot of other things that are linked to this time distortion in the woods. But this is a big one, and a lot of people disagree. Oh, the background looks different. Oh, he's wearing something else. But that's really a wardrobe department. That's not an actual story issue.
A lot of people wanted the brother to be the one who killed Heather at the end by accident.
Well, and also a possibility, and when we go back to the original, right, where you brought up that the Blair Witch makes so-and-so do the killing.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so cameraman disappears in the original Blair Witch. Then there's the guy and Heather left to go to the house. They go to the house. Heather and the guy are separated. Guy goes down in the basement and gets knocked out. Okay, so he's knocked out. He's done or dead. Heather goes down in the basement and someone is standing in the corner. Well, hold on. We're down to one guy. So then arguably it's the Blair Witch, someone who we didn't see in the original Blair Witch movie, or someone who came back in time from the new movie.
So I think it was Rustin Parr's spirit. Because he's the one that made people go in the corner. Right?
So his spirit is holding a rock or something and hitting people over the head?
Well.
Yeah.
Well. Like,
wait. Did his spirit consult with the subway ghost from the 1990 movie Ghost?
But why?
He's like, get off my train! And he taught him how to move a rock.
Why would the Blair Witch put people in corners when that was, like, the other dude's thing?
Well, or maybe it wasn't his thing. He just did it because of the Blair Witch.
Oh, it's stupid. You're right.
Yeah, it's a lot of things. You can go all over the place.
Some people think it was that kid. So one of the redneck kids in this movie, they think it was him who killed the three. because he was working for that witch for years because he had a beard.
Oh, when he reappeared with the beard?
Yeah, they think he could have been the one doing the killing, messing with the three campers in the 99 movie.
You know, someone made an interesting and very simple comment on Facebook when I was when I was in a discussion with a bunch of people about this, and they said, well, the way that the movie got in the last 30 minutes, and there's clearly magic, and there's time travel or time distortion, and physics distortion with the compass and everything, anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there really is no way. We could watch these movies 1,000 times and have crack teams on them, and it's almost like a listener question. There is absolutely not a correct answer.
And I bet the director would just be like, yep.
Sure.
And by the way, you know, I kind of don't like that Simon Barrett was willing to confirm what that creature at the end was or wasn't. You know, 10, 15 years ago, that was unheard of. Like, if you asked the writer about that, even the writer would say, well, you know, I don't know what it was, or this, that, or the other. You know, that's the interpretation of the audience. It's very unusual for me to hear a writer say, oh, no, that wasn't the Blair Witch.
Yeah, Barrett confirms. That's not the Blair Witch, Barrett confirms.
I think that that makes Barrett a jerk. No, I'm serious. If you think back to old interpretations of older, well, not old, just older movies written by people, and when they're asked about it, it's often left up to the response of viewers, or here's what I gave you, and now it's on film, and I shouldn't have to explain anything. This is up to people's interpretation now. Because the art form is what's on the screen.
Well, that's what the original did, and look at all the theories.
Right, but and that's just it, though. No one is saying from the original, no, this was this.
Yeah.
Whereas now he's doing that, I kind of feel like he's – and I don't dislike Simon Barrett in general. I'm just saying that in this one action of his, I feel like it should be scolded. I feel like he should be slapped on the hand. I don't think writers should do that. Because if you didn't give it – it's like, Mark, I think you brought this up in a podcast about post-credit scenes from Roger Ebert, how once the credits have started, you are not allowed to show anything on screen that modifies the story.
That's right.
Well, by that same account, if you give something on screen and it is unsolvable by viewers, you have no right to say what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my opinion. I feel like he crossed an unspoken line by saying what that was. And if he had to say what it was for people to believe it, and even after he says it, we roll our eyes. In my opinion, that means he did poorly, and or with Adam Wingard, did poorly in conveying that on the screen.
I'm with you.
Yeah, guys, so, I have the sneaking suspicion that Gerard Butler was involved. He wouldn't have so many theories or speculation. Like, he was just taking care of the Blair Witch once and for all.
Yeah. I mean, he would have blown everybody up. He would have murdered the campers just because he was in such a rampage.
Yeah. It would have been glorious.
Have you seen a scene in Monty Python where John Cleese runs into the castle and just murders people?
Yeah. He, like, kills, like, everybody because he was looking for Sir Robin, wasn't he?
Yeah, no, someone sent a letter saying, please rescue me. So he just went and murdered everybody.
Wait, so you're talking about murdering. That's exciting. My opinion was part one, or the original The Blair Witch Project, and my opinion was very unexciting, to be polite. I actually thought that this movie, after about minute 40, was very exciting. I thought it was a very entertaining popcorn flick if I check my brain at the door once I hit about the halfway point. And don't get me wrong, they're shaking the camera like crazy. They're screaming as loud as they can. The Blair Witch is evidently deforesting half of the Black Hill Woods, right? Knocking over trees and making noise. But I thought that was all exciting, and it made it hard to focus and hone in on when something actually important happened. And as a result, it was like the opposite for me of Paranormal Activity or White Noise. Like those movies, it was all quiet. And so you're staring, looking for something to move and listening carefully for something to happen. In this movie, you're inundated with with sensory overload. And so I was constantly kind of excited for what would happen that would matter. Am I alone there?
Yeah. I mean, I was never excited.
Never. See, yeah, like I thought it was very exciting. The whole last 40 minutes I thought was very exciting, but you didn't feel that.
I feel like I've seen it all before.
And I won't disagree with you there.
Okay. So, hey, I just want to do this. I just want to read this thing so I don't give anybody the wrong idea. This is from The Thrillist, and it's an interview with Barrett. Here's what I extrapolate from Barrett's teases based on gut feelings. Ashley is slowly turning into one of the Blair Witch stick figures. Lane reveals early on that there's more to the Ellie Kenwood story than we previously realized. She wasn't simply burned alive. The original Blair townsfolk strapped her to a homemade vise, stretching her out into a shape resembling the stick figures. At the end of the movie, we see a tree-like creature running amok in Rustin Parr's cabin. That's not the Blair Witch, Barrett confirms, or group from Guardians of the Galaxy. It's Ellie Kedward, now made of branches. So what I'm assuming is that's Barrett saying that's not the Blair Witch.
Unless that was taken horribly out of context again, I feel like a line was crossed with that.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure no one later on, like that, I'm reading this from Thrillist and sure. An interview with Barrett.
And like it's someone who could be misquoting something, like, yeah, like I get all that. That's, yeah, it's a good quote disclaimer.
Like, I'll tell you, if you hadn't talked to me about these theories, I would have totally June Diane Rayfield this film, like, from How Did This Get Made? I would have totally just been like, huh? You know how sometimes she's just like, she just zones out during these movies? That was kind of me. But it was fun reading these theories.
Right. So. Oh, no, yeah. Very entertaining. It's like there's... People can say there's a right answer, but my opinion is you put it on screen. That screen is the data. You don't get to tell me otherwise. The screen is the data. And based on the data, the screen, there is no right or wrong answer to most of this. No one can tell me who's turning into what from the freshwater parasite from her cut foot. No one can tell me that the tree-like monster, which I refuse to say is tree-like... is or isn't the Blair Witch?
For me,
this movie was exciting and entertaining, and the moment it ended, I was disappointed thinking about it a little bit, and then I started reading more about it, and I was kind of entertained reading about it. Like I'm all over the place with this movie. First 40 minutes, I thought it was boring as hell. Next 40 minutes, I liked it while you stayed bored.
It's right. And it's not even going to make more money than Book of Shadows, which is crazy.
Ooh. No, you know, we didn't talk about Book of Shadows in this, but I actually love, love, love Book of Shadows. I think it's better than both other movies.
Yeah.
Well, I think it accomplished what the original Blair Witch did. But I think it's better as a movie. The Blair Witch Project is a better film.
Really?
So it's like a flick.
But you see, it's not just a flick. It's a great flick, part two, in my opinion. Whereas this new one is just an entertaining flick to me. And the first one was a good film that is no longer very entertaining to me.
Right. So
that's actually how I feel about the original Halloween. Like the original Halloween no longer affects me, whereas a lot of other movies like A Nightmare on Elm Street still affects me. The original Halloween doesn't, but when I watch the original Halloween, and I honestly do feel kind of bored, I still like watching it. It still is extremely interesting to me. I can still see all the important things and all the things that it did before other movies, but it no longer takes me on that horror journey.
Right. So, guys, final verdict on the new Blair Witch movie.
Needed more stump jumping Jerry Butler.
So that's a thumbs down.
Yep. Two eggs down.
Yeah. Living good.
I give it one out of two thumbs up. It really just is, if you have no expectations and you don't get motion sickness, yeah, I'd say give it a shot if you've seen the other things you want to see in the theaters already.
You know how Joaquin Phoenix holds his thumb to the side before he puts it down or up in Gladiator?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I give this movie.
No.
It's I guess I won't kill him because too many people will be upset with me.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to give it like a middle finger. I give it one middle finger.
That'd be funny if he has his thumb. Yeah. Like, all right, so put your left hand out, stick your thumb out to the side, like your thumb is parallel with the ground, and then just put your middle finger out and flip it around.
Well, I think that's an appropriate note to end the podcast on. But before we sign off, are there any plugs you want to make?
Yeah. Since it's fall, the leaves are falling, you should really check out Lazavast's new podcast. It's called Crunching Leaves.
Yep.
And basically, Lazavast goes around with a really great recorder. I mean, perfect sound. Mm. Records podcasts where he goes and walks on crunchy leaves.
I traveled to all four corners of America.
Yep.
You know, last week was the Pacific Northwest.
Like, you would be amazed at the crunchy noises that the different leaves make.
So is this kind of like, you know how like when a cat is kneading on your chest back and forth with its paws, like it's trying to get comfortable and it's just kneading up and down with its paws on your chest? Is he doing that in the leaves?
No, it's just a regular stroll.
Like, yeah, I'm like, just strolling.
You know when the T-Rex steps on that guy in Jurassic Park 2?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. That's what Lazavast does, right, Laz?
Yeah. Just walking around.
Yep. But I mean, sometimes sometimes he strolls, right, Laz? You call it the stroll walk. And then you got the run, the jog.
Stroll walk.
And then you got the hops.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to test them all differently.
Well, it's a 3-hour podcast, so I got to mix it up.
I was really amazed what you found in Denver.
Yeah, me too. Didn't realize there's so many leaves there.
Yeah. I mean, it was, what was the name of the pod? Crunch City? Isn't that what you called it?
Crunch City.
No, Crunch Town, USA.
Crunch Town, USA.
Yeah.
That was probably my favorite. So listen to Crunch, John Lazavast Crunch on Shark Dropper.
Nice. Let me good. You got any plugs?
You know, this is just a fun one. I was on Twitter just yesterday, and then I clicked on a podcast because I listened to like 5 podcasts a day while I'm at work playing with my bugs. And this podcast called Nerdy Bitches, which is a pop culture, usually movie podcast, they are new to social media, and they said, we're getting all these things happening that we don't understand, and I don't know why we're getting Jean-Claude Van Damme tags on Twitter. And it was right after I was posting about Time Cop. And I attacked, so I let them know, it's like, that was me, that was my review. And they said, oh yeah, it's like, so they didn't understand the whole like retweet thing. And like, they just thought I was like, hey, random podcast that I may or may not listen to, check out Van Damme's butt, because I have a picture of him doing the split in his underwear in the post that I tagged him on.
Oh, nice.
And I just thought that was a funny little like human moment. But I do like Nerdy Bitches podcast. They're pretty entertaining, just on the side. So now I'm gonna tag them, and I'm gonna let them know that I gave them a shout out, and I want to see what happens.
Nice.
and see if they're still confused and just, you know, chatting about Van Damme's butt.
Yeah.
But that's my random little bit.
Nice. Yeah, check out the Lamb, a large ass movie blog. Lark hey, ass.
By the way, I heard that the Shark Dropper Paralyzed podcast is doing quite well.
Crushing it.
Yeah. It's doing pretty well. People really enjoy it. So
And that's one of the couple of Shark Dropper fiction horror podcasts, right?
Yeah. It's one of our many fictional shows. So yeah, check that out if you're into fictional audio stories. So, but yeah, I think that's it, right? Nothing else?
Nope.
Cool. All right, guys, for my co-hosts, Mark Hopmeyer,
Crunch,
John Levigood,
Van Damme's Time Cop, but
I've been your host, John Lawson. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
the target. T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.